So we have on the line Congressman Bill Peduto. Bill, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, Dan. Hey, Bob. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you very much. And make that councilman that rather than congressman.
Oh, sorry.
I'll go for the promotion and get out of the mayor's race today.
Yeah. So yeah. Bill is, as for our listeners may very well know, is a city councilman in the city of Pittsburgh and representing the Shadyside district in Pittsburgh.
So we have a number of topics to discuss with Councilman Peduto. I mean, there's a lot of things have happened. We've also discussed a number of issues on Left Out in the previous programs that you may wish to comment on as well.
Sure.
So there's some specific questions, like, for example, what do you hope to accomplish as mayor?
I think, Dan, the beginning of it is creating a new agenda for Pittsburgh and basically looking at cities around this country, cities that we could compare ourselves with, Minneapolis, Portland, and find out exactly how they have been able to reverse a trend that has been plaguing not only Pittsburgh but Pennsylvania. That's one of sprawl and decline. We see incentive dollars being used to invest in areas that are basically green space, and we're calling them blighted. And the dollars are chasing development out of the city. We're being left with a hollowed-out core. And it really needs to be a full understanding, not only of the issue, but of the policies we embrace in order to start to reverse the trend, become the model for Pennsylvania, and then start lobbying with the other 53 cities around the state in order to effectuate the change that's needed. So under the situation we're in right now, Act 47, Oversight Board, a lot of people feel that the next mayor really doesn't have that much power. But the truth of the matter is both of those organizations and both of the policies with them give the next mayor a whole new toolbox in order to work with. And it's probably the best opportunity that we're going to see in our lifetime to change this city.
So could you explain that? I think the common understanding is that, that why would anyone want to be mayor with two different competing and often bickering oversight, the oversight board and the Act 47 board seeming to be, fighting over this, that, and the other thing. And he said, she said, going on constantly, most recently because of the fireman's contract and so forth. So I wonder if you could explain to our listeners why is this an opportunity and why this will be fun for you and a job that's worth doing.
And the campaign that's worth putting up with in order to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of just my opinion, I'll give you history.
Okay, that'll be great.
Ed Rendell became the mayor of Philadelphia, and he said when he accepted that it was like a patient that was brought into the emergency room with a head wound, suffering a heart attack, and having cancer. The head wound was the bleeding financial situation that was occurring in Philadelphia. The cancer was the economic development that never seemed to move the area forward. And the heart attack was the future budgets that they would be facing. And the lack of city services that were going on. He decided to take on the head wound first to get the fiscal discipline underway. The only way that he was able to do so, and this is his words, not mine, was through having the oversight board on board with him, basically to change some of the things that in Philadelphia that have been holding them back in order to make the changes that he did later on. But basically, by using the oversight board as an ally and not an adversary, he has stated that he was able to help to move Philadelphia forward in ending the decline that they had been looking at for about 10 to 15 years prior.
So what concretely, though, does this how do you think you'd be able to take advantage of this for the benefit of us who live in Pittsburgh?
Really three different ways. Number one is a five-year plan. Well, we've been living year to year and living outside of our means. Act 47 and oversight watching over it really gives us a five-year plan to do so. Number two is the oversight board allows us to examine best efficiency practices within not only city government, but the authorities that are created by the state for city government, which have sort of been this separatist state that has served on its own. And it really needs to be brought back under the control of people and of the city. And the third way is directly within the departments and being able to create more efficient government. Really, we have a system, even in some departments, that still works off of paper. And there hasn't been a desire or a need or a push in order to move it to a more efficient type of system. These oversight boards will require us to do so. So under those three different scenarios, there's really an opportunity. When even getting more concrete about it, when I talk about the authorities and how the authorities sort of act and work on their own, you know, council cannot vote to change priorities or vote to change how economic development dollars are spent by the URA. But we have an opportunity in the next 4 years. And the URA is a great example that shows Pittsburgh innovation from 1946.
What is the URA?
So, yes, you should explain, please.
Sure. The URA is the Urban Redevelopment Authority.
Right.
It's the economic development arm of city government. It takes about $20 million of federal funds every year, and it gets to spend those funds in areas that are either blighted or areas that are served by lower-income people. It also gets grant money and has the ability to do its own bond issues and create its own debt, and basically works as a quasi-government of its own, separate of the independent, democratic-elected city government. The board members are appointed by the mayor. They are responsible for their own revenue and their own expenses. Like I said, the money comes from the federal government. And it was created in order to create development in blighted areas by David Lawrence, the mayor of Pittsburgh from the 1940s. And at that time, it was cutting edge. But since that time, other cities have found different ways. What they've done is they've merged the economic development muscle of money with the planning initiatives of a thoughtful, planned economic development for a city and a region.
So how are you proposing to somehow change the URA or eliminate
exactly.
the URA? Or,
no, I think that the model really is merging the city planning department with the URA and creating a department of planning and neighborhood development. The city is a small municipality now compared to what it used to be. There used to be about one-third of the entire region's population living within the city borders. That was back in the days of David Lawrence. Now there's about 300,000 people out of 2.2 million living within the city. We can't be that economic development engine anymore. And in fact, we need to work with the county in order to allow the region to plan for its growth instead of competing against Monroeville and competing against Katanning for where the plant's going to be put. We need in upping the ante of public dollars in order to woo them into whichever municipality. We need to step back and we need to refocus our attention into our neighborhoods. And the economic development dollars need to be spent in those areas to reestablish our neighborhoods.
So,
and at the same time, work with the county and the region to do true economic development, not what we're seeing right now, which is retail development or land development.
And so you as a mayor would be able to, you get a clean slate, you can to name the members of the URA as you enter into office, or you require legislation?
No, the model stays the same for the most part, and mm-hmm. we could work with the state legislature in order to change that.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that I would be bringing on board would be people that would be supporters of sustainable development, meaning development where the incentives are provided for areas that already have infrastructure, roads, sewer lines, other utilities, to redevelop those areas instead of money being provided to incentives to areas that are green, which cost less for developers to develop.
So this brings us to an interesting point. Before we launch into that, let me just remind our listeners that you're welcome to call us and talk with Councilman Peduto at 412-268-9728. As you well know, as many of our listeners know, Councilman Peduto is running for election as mayor in the Democratic ticket.
When is the election, by the way?
Well, what matters is the primary, isn't it? And the primary date is May 17th. And
10 weeks from today.
10 weeks. Okay, so we have some time to talk with you yet. So you mentioned this green. So I think really the underlying topic here is the use of, I think, tax increment financing is probably the technical term. And I think you're probably that's probably what you're referring to in terms of subsidizing sprawl. Is that right?
Partly.
Partly. Could you explain some more about what you mean by this, please?
Sure. There are different ways. Right now what we've seen in Pittsburgh, for the metropolitan area of Pittsburgh, it's about a 6-county region by the Census Bureau. And in that area, over the course of the past 20 years, what we have witnessed is the most land being developed per household. And it's actually off the charts compared to other regions.
Yeah, I've heard this. We've talked about this before and left out.
And what we're doing, though, is we're providing incentives continue that. We're looking at the largest sprawl building highway in the United States, the Monfayette Expressway.
Yeah, that was on my list.
it would not provide economic development to the Mon Valley. It would be the Mon Valley bypass. And all you have to do is look at 279 and look at what has happened to the north side.
North side bypass.
And yeah. Exactly. It has destroyed older communities. Portland, Oregon is a great example. And then let me just talk about that example, because
that's sort of
the model that I'd like to use. Portland decided that they were going to take on their trend of sprawl and decline head on. And they decided to put together initiatives through the city that then became regional. They put together regional planning so that the entire county of Portland was encompassed in areas where development was encouraged and that where incentives were placed, in areas that were preserved, where any developer that tried to develop there would be faced with strict limitations or opposition at planning or zoning. They also said, we have this amazing highway along the Willamette River, but wouldn't it be great if we had a park? And they tore the highway out and created waterfront development through a park to make Portland a more pleasant place, but also added to the quality of life for the people who live there.
They tore out a highway.
Yes.
That's sacrilege.
Well, no, they have done this throughout the world, understanding that waterfront areas are key areas for development and highways deter development. What we're looking at with the Monfayette Expressway
is going to ruin more waterfront.
Not only waterfront, but older communities.
Yeah.
All the older communities, which they call blighted or poor, are all the communities that could be refurbished and could have investment dollars going to them instead of building a $4 billion highway that will destroy all of them to take you to Fayette County so that you can live in the Laurel Highlands. What a wonderful thing. I'd love to live in the Laurel Highlands, but what's going to happen to the city of Pittsburgh when you have a 35-minute commute to downtown? You're going to see a new Cranberry Township that's going to draw all the tax dollars that are remaining in the city out. You're going to see places like Oakland and Shadyside and Squirrel Hill, communities that have single-family homes, those homes being divided into apartments for students. There's not going to be, why would anybody want to live in an area where you have to pay so much more in taxes when you could live in an area outside of it that's being subsidized by your tax dollars in order to build? So this is the trend that Portland took on. So the last thing they did is they said, hey, we've got this big highway project on the books. Let's scrap it. Instead, let's invest in a light rail system, and let's connect all of our older communities back together like they were when they were done by train. And they invested in the downtown area in a trolley system, and it has been extremely successful.
Bob just gave you a high five. You
can
see it.
You can't see this on the radio, but I'm delighted to hear you mention this.
Well,
because
actually,
both of these issues have been really very important to us and left out.
Well, last week, one of our guests was Dave Tessitore. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, I know Dave.
He's a community activist.
He also talked about light rail and how it needs to be developed here.
So to give an example of this, I mean, I've often wondered. I'm not a native Pittsburgher, actually, neither is Danny. We both moved here. I've been living here about 15 years, though, so you may call me an honorary Pittsburgher by now. But one of the things that I've wondered about is if you look by making comparison to other cities, maybe like Portland or others. For example, if you look at the city of Pittsburgh, you know, I've asked myself many times, why is Allentown, like, not one of the greatest places to live in the whole city? Because they have the spectacular views of downtown. They're right near downtown.
Mount Washington.
Mount Washington. Yeah, Allentown is the neighborhood which is up Arlington. If you go up Arlington, for example, from Station Square, you pop out in Allentown, and there's other neighborhoods up there as well. I just happen to name that one.
Yep.
And they have a light rail. There's a track that goes up there, but as far as I know, that track is disused now for streetcars that goes all the way up through the center of the heart of Allentown and Mount Washington and other city neighborhoods up there, also into Mount Oliver, which is not city of Pittsburgh, but right nearby. And the question is, what can you as mayor do to make these kinds of things happen?
Well, the mayor has an incredible amount of power in deciding what local projects get financed. There's a group called the Southwestern Pennsylvania Commission, and actually I get to sit on the board as the member for city council. It is a group that is the regional planning organization for actually, I believe it's 10 counties now of Southwestern Pennsylvania. And they prioritize projects, or at least we're supposed to prioritize projects, and say what gets done and what doesn't get done. The mayor has the ability to look at the projects that are coming through the city of Pittsburgh to make those priority projects. But what is needed, more importantly, is a willingness from other people throughout the region to look at these ideas as a holistic approach to transportation for the entire region. I think there's some areas where we can make some small gains in order to get to that type of consensus, but obviously we need somebody at the helm for our largest city who believes in these types of ideas.
And also related to this rail is what can you do to stop the Mon Fayette Expressway? I mean, I would be delighted to help, you know,
yeah.
to do anything I can.
I've been doing a heck of a lot lately, and I've actually contacted every agency that has been involved in the permitting process of it, and it has not made me many friends with the highway contractors. And unfortunately,
well, good for you.
No, but unfortunately, what they're not realizing is that there are alternatives that could also allow them to build that, you know, home down in Boca, that they can also be able to sustain areas within the city. 837 is a road that runs parallel to the Monongahela River, and it goes right through the areas that we're talking about in the Mon Valley. That road is basically a 1920 road. I mean, it's a very, if you've ever driven, it's a two-lane road. It hugs up against tracks. It hugs up towards
the river. Oh, sure, I've gone down there.
But the fact is that it could be upgraded, especially with the CXX line that runs parallel to it.
Yeah, that's right.
CXX is talking about selling. You could create an urban boulevard. And when I talk about that, in the fashion of Western Pennsylvania, it is Ardmore Boulevard up in Forest Hills, Route 30.
Mm-hmm.
But in the fashion of the United States, it's George Washington Parkway
mm-hmm.
in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Now imagine if you had something like that that connected into the Mon Valley. Imagine if you used a light rail system that took you into the Mon Valley and had a big multi-transportation mode right at Century 3 Mall. And what if you upgraded Route 51? Now what you're doing is you're investing in areas that already have infrastructure. You're investing in the upgrade, in the revitalization of those areas. You're preserving green areas like the Fayette County area that we're talking about, while still having direct route to those areas that you want to rebuild. So I think that's, and guess what? Those highway contractors will get the contracts to build it. It's how do you utilize the funds that we know are already there in order to sustain areas that have already been built. In the way that you explain this to Republicans and to others who fight that idea is, I guess you want to pay more taxes. Because when we still build that new highway, guess what? Route 51 is still going to be there. 837 is still going to be there. We're just going to have to maintain more highway. We're going to have to maintain more sewer lines. We're going to have to maintain more infrastructure. And we're going to see fewer and fewer people in this region. So,
yeah, it doesn't make any sense at all.
Right.
So we're talking, if I may interrupt a minute, we're talking with Pittsburgh City Councilman Bill Peduto, who's running for mayor on the Democratic ticket. And listeners are welcome to call and talk with Councilman Peduto at 412-268-9728 or send mail to Bob at leftout.info.
Bob, can I just make a plug, too?
Sure. Go right ahead.
It's the website that we have up for the campaign, BillPeduto.com. Under it, it has a area you can click on called Agenda, and it basically goes through these points and also adds some other points that are critical for a new urban agenda for Pittsburgh. And it basically, when I see these different issues, they oftentimes look like a mosaic to me, that they all are critical parts of building one new vision for the city.
We'll put a link to your webpage on our webpage, which gives me an opportunity to plug leftout.info as the webpage
yeah.
for our program. And we will, after the show, put a link to Councilman Peduto's website, BillPeduto.com, if you want to look there.
And actually, we will be launching, I believe, tomorrow, our first iPod broadcast.
Oh, are you? We've been talking about this ourselves. Tell
yeah.
us more, please.
I just have a lot of tech-oriented volunteers that are working on the campaign, and they did some searches and found out that there were only like two other campaigns in the United States that have been able to take advantage of the opportunity to do pod broadcasting. So
I can tell you one thing for sure. If you want to reach young people and students in particular, that's the way to go.
That's what they tell me. I have good young advisors.
So I have a few other questions for you. One is, let me ask you a more general question, and then we may come back to some more particulars as well. So the more general question is this, is that, you know, our listeners and more generally the citizens of Pittsburgh are going to have to make a decision, and they're going to come to the polls. And at the moment, I believe for the Democratic primary, it'll be between you and Michael Lamb and Bob O'Connor. If I'm not mistaken, there possibly is there a fourth candidate?
You may not want to mention the name. No, there may be as many as six now.
Okay.
Today was the day for everyone to get their signature and ballot.
So my question for you is this. You may not like me to say this, but probably you're not the best known person on the ticket. Mm-hmm. And there is someone who is very well-known figure. And the question is, how do you distinguish yourself? Why should someone vote for you instead of, let's say, Bob O'Connor or Michael Lamb or perhaps any of the other candidates who may be running?
I think it comes down to a couple different factors. You know, we use the expression on our campaign, proven leadership for a new Pittsburgh. Part of it is that during the 3 years that I've been on council, the decisions that we've had to make, especially on the budget issues, have been extremely difficult. They have not been easy, and they've actually required to stand up and to be accounted for on very difficult issues. My record and Bob's record are extremely different on those issues, on having to make difficult decisions, on cutting of services when you knew that it was necessary in order not to go bankrupt, in order to create new revenues and new taxes when that was necessary as well. So we have a record on the leadership issues of doing what is not popular, of doing what is not most likely to get you reelected, but doing what is right for this city and this region. But the thing that also differs from us is the fact that everything that we talk about is building a city for the 21st century. Whether it's the economic development ideas that we spoke of, or even ideas that we talk about preservation and conservation, even though it may seem like preserving older architecture or green hillsides may be looking backwards, it's actually looking to the future and what we're going to be handing to our next generation, which is a unique city. It's not anywhere USA. And I think that those ideas that we incorporate, innovation and technology into city services to lessen costs, in a lot of different ways that we've proven it over the past 3 years, will market ourselves separate from Bob. But the bigger question is, how do you win? And that's where we come back to the base of what we represent. The district encompasses Squirrel Hill, Point Breeze, Shadyside, Oakland, Bloomfield, Friendship, parts of East Liberty. That area, I've actually been serving for 10 years now, 7 years as Dan Cohen's chief of staff and 3 years on my own two legs. And we've engaged that community strongly, every neighborhood.
I'm really happy to hear that what you've said about the issues of development, the issues of the highways and things like that. But can you make a concrete difference between between your positions on those issues, the ones we've talked about, and, for example, Bob O'Connor?
Yeah, I can. Bob O'Connor supports the Monfayette Expressway. He sponsored a resolution before council to have city council support the Monfayette Expressway. I'm in opposition to the Monfayette Expressway. I supported a resolution before council for the Turnpike Commission and the Federal Highway Administration to consider the Citizens Alternative Plan to the Monfayette, which was authored by local urban planners, experts in transportation, architects, community leaders from Hazelwood and Oakland and from the Mon Valley, who put together their idea of where we need to invest in transportation. Bob O'Connor supports building a highway between 2nd Avenue and 5th Avenue that would connect Oakland to 2nd Avenue. I support purchasing the CXX line and putting a DMU vehicle that's being used in Denver. And
what does that mean?
I don't know what it stands for. I can't remember. It's like diesel mobile unit or something. But it's I call it a trolley on steroids. It's a big self-propelled passenger car that works off of existing railroad. So you could actually put that down. If we get that CXX line, you could put it down right in Hazelwood. It would come down 2nd Avenue to where the tech center is and places like the Entertainment Technology Center at CMU and others. It would come up through the park, and the park would remain a park. You wouldn't build a highway in a park. I mean, this is what started a revolution in New York when they talked about building something through Central Park,
that's
a highway
right.
through Central Park. But you would actually go through the park, come up right at Chinley Plaza, that would connect to CMU and to by the museum to Pitt, go underneath through the tunnel under Neville Street, and then come back out towards Bloomfield, Lawrenceville, down by the Children's Hospital Center mm-hmm. that's being mm-hmm. built, right down to the Robotics Center, mm-hmm. right to it, mm-hmm. and then be able to connect up to what would hopefully be a light rail system that would be, you know, be down towards the Strip District. But that's my vision for where we need to invest in the north-south rail. And the fact is that we don't wouldn't have to build it because it runs off of existing railroads.
Things that are there. Yeah,
yeah, and it mm-hmm. basically has a bus engine, a bus diesel engine that propels it. I actually had the opportunity, the Port Authority brought one in because they're looking at using it for commuter rail between older communities like Greensburg, Indiana, Washington. And I rode it from downtown Pittsburgh to Greensburg. And it's just a great vehicle in cities under limited budgets and regions under limited budgets are looking to that as part of a multimodal transportation system. But that's where we completely differ.
Can you maybe, would you like to bring up some other issues where you distinguish yourself sharply from?
Well, just on the transportation issue, transit as well. I've been an outspoken advocate for the funding of transit, and that's one of the reasons I think that you can't support every single issue. You have to pick if it's transportation because there's only a limited amount of dollars. You can't be for transit and for the Monfayette and for a slow-speed maglev and for a high-speed maglev and for an expanded Parkway West. You have to pick what your priorities are in order to get them done. And I've been very clear on that my priorities are for the build-out of a transit system toward light rail, and Bob's are towards the building of a highway.
So we're talking with City Councilman Bill Peduto, who's running for mayor in the city of Pittsburgh, and our listeners are welcome to call at 412-268-9728. I have another question, which is to do with development within the city of Pittsburgh. So I think Danny and I certainly agree with you about these issues of the suburbs and sprawl and so on. One thing that has been a topic that we've made here is that we've talked about here and left out a number of times is the use of tax increment financing within the city to support developments. For example, I understand that that's been used in for the Giant Eagle expansion on Center Avenue and on the Southside Works development. And I think that's an issue of some concern for several reasons. One is just whether this is a good way to be spending public money. And the other is that it often these kinds of developments seem to be sort of a shell game because really the area, the city is not expanding. And so development in one area tends to just bleed resources and people and businesses out of another. And that's an issue that I'm really concerned about, and I would like to give you a chance to comment on.
Sure. Just for the procedural part of it, a tax increment financing proposal does not start with city government itself. It could be a request by a developer made to the mayor, but for the most part, it comes out of the Urban Redevelopment Authority.
Mm-hmm.
And then the authority works through the administration and then at the end brings it to not only the city council but also the county council and the school board for a vote. By the time that it gets to the legislative bodies, the three taxing bodies for the vote, you are either voting for the survival of the project or being told that the project won't happen. It's a very, I don't want to say convoluted, but it's a very...
Well, it's a racket, isn't it? I mean, it's basically an extortion game, isn't it?
For the most part, it is. And even the building on CMU that's almost completed now has a TIF with it as well. It's almost to the point where anybody who's going to develop anything, why not ask for a TIF? I mean, if the rules are so gray under which projects are being awarded them, it would almost behoove any developer to say, and I want a TIF with it. I think that what needs to happen, again, this is a process, and this was legislation that was created in the state in 1946, and it really hasn't been updated that much since then. I think that what needs to happen is the city needs to operate more like a public trust and less like a bank. And what that means is that you can't pick winners and losers when you're using public tax dollars. So what you need to do is you need to strip back and go to a policy where you create programs, and anybody can qualify for the program. The state has that through the Department of Community and Economic Development. The city has it with some. There's a great program within the city if you want to buy a house called the Pittsburgh Home Ownership Program. And basically it determines what your income is and where you want to live in order to determine what type of assistance you can get. But it applies to everyone. And I think that that's where we need to look at changing TIF policy. Because right now, you're absolutely right. It isn't fair. And it isn't fair to reward somebody with public dollars that may be creating a retail market that would just hurt an existing business district close by.
So as an example, if I may take you to task on this, my understanding is that you were supportive of the use of a TIF for the Giant Eagle development on Center Avenue. And to me, that seems like a good example of where it should never be used.
Yeah, with the TIF on Giant Eagle, it was used for the housing component of it, the apartments that were built on it. And the apartments are actually built on an area that where they were able to get also some other credits on the development side of it, not financial credits, but density, the amount of built the units that could go in, because it's on a transportation, public transportation line.
Yeah, it's right on the busway there.
You try to encourage as much density and development along a bus line, then it's just a good growth model. But the by the time that I had my first meeting with Giant Eagle, they were already told that they were getting a TIF, or at least the TIF was in the model. So what I tried to do with it was to leverage as much public infrastructure improvement out of them as I could. And I got basically around $4 million worth of concessions from them, from building or purchasing additional houses that the community wanted, that one was abandoned since 1989, to creating a cul-de-sac on the street so that trucks and other people wouldn't use the area as a cut-through, to decorating the cul-de-sac with decorative lights, to replacing the neighborhood sewer line, which was an incredibly expensive prospect, to even taking the development and putting it away from where the houses were.
So we got our money's worth out of the TIF.
No, I don't think. Well, yes, we did. We definitely squeezed it for everything that the neighborhood could squeeze it for. But the fact of the matter is it shouldn't have been an area that we were even considering. I actually had to go back and fight the planning commission in order to get the residential area. They had taken this big wide swath and considered the whole area blighted. And what the neighbors were scared of, and they should have been, was that their properties could also be considered used for a TIF in the future, and developers would start buying all the neighborhood.
I see.
So what we did is we took that, we went back to the Planning Commission and told them they just killed the project, that it will never fly as long as you keep the residential component in it. Then I went a step further and downzoned the entire area to allow it to remain a single-family area in order to create a buffer area away from what's happening in that area, which is large institution. But I agree with you. I'm not defending that. I think that a TIF is necessary or should be utilized in areas like Shadyside. I just say that by the time that it came to me, it was a done deal. That's again where you see the difference between administration and legislation. You could say that, well, you should have fought it and killed it. But if I fought it and killed it, you would continue to see an empty center there that wasn't developed, and the area that would potentially go in could have been much more detrimental than what is happening right now.
The kind of thing that, well, that's good to hear. The thing that I think really does make sense is down the street there is there was an effort made by the city to undo the one-way traffic pattern around the East Liberty Penn Circle in order to accommodate the Whole Foods market, which I think it makes a lot of sense because, well, it was a bad idea anyway. This whole Penn Circle business is a disaster, so it was good to undo that. So anyway, I just thought I'd chip in my own opinion there. I think
that's only the beginning. You're going to see quite a bit more happening. It's happening actually right now. But the Whole Foods is about one-third or one-fourth of the development that's going to be happening in East Liberty along that area. It will blur the area of Shadyside and East Liberty into East Side.
Well, that would be good, and I certainly hope to undo the Penn Circle disaster, which I have to say I think was a URA project back in the 50s and 60s, wasn't it?
It was, and it's on the books to be completely turned over in the next 10 years. I mean, it's the money for the changes like you saw that have happened so far are part of this priority that I was talking about with the SPC for the city of Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it pains me to think of the beautiful houses that must have been destroyed to make some of that.
Yeah.
But it's water well under the bridge.
I wanted to thank you for joining our program, and really heartened to hear some of your opinions and the fact that you're taking ideas from other parts of the country that have been successful and importing them to Pittsburgh. We really need people with vision.
We need that kind of perspective.
Right.
Well, again, I ask you to look at the site. It's BillPedito.com. Go to Agenda. Look at the seven areas that I talk about. Didn't get a chance to talk about citizen empowerment and community-based development. But all these issues link. They're all connected. And email us. Let us know thoughts and opinions about it. And we will respond.
Okay. Thank you very much. This is Councilman Bill Peduto.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you very much for calling in. We'll take a brief break, and we'll be back shortly.